This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
So below the ankle interventions, I think that most vascular surgeons now feel comfortable delivering therapy for below the knee vessels. But we are now facing the issue that we can probably float that wire a little bit more distal. And the question then becomes, when do you do it? And if so, how do you do it? And do we know the answers to these questions? Because in general terms, people that do a lot of procedures and are, as Shant said yesterday, lesionologists, they'll just go after anything, and a lot of times I don't believe that there's a whole lot of sensical thought process put into it. And that said, I don't know that I can give you a whole lot of data about this, but I'll at least share some of our cases and some of the thoughts that we've put behind them and some of the ways that we think we may be able to answer this question. I do have one conflict today. I am part of a company called Profusa, and I will have one slide of that company that I think is important and relevant to this talk. My experience goes all the way back to Germany. These are the guys that trained me into a quote-unquote hybrid from open vascular surgery to doing a lot of interventions, endovascularly primarily, and I do miss a lot, as you can see on the bottom picture. It was a typical German thing that between cases we can have coffee, wine, or beer, something that we don't do a whole lot of in America. So this is the below-the-knee anatomy, and for those of you that aren't necessarily vascular surgeons, we're looking at three beautiful vessels all the way down to the foot, and then from the ankle down we have perfusion into the pedal loop. What we're facing now is this, is a really diffuse disease, and it has to do exactly with what we've been talking about today. It's diabetes. It's the neuropathy that leads to this diffuse disease. And then more importantly now is the fact that we're dealing with end-stage renal disease as probably the worst of the worst in this patient population. So a 59-year-old female diabetic on dialysis that had already a bypass all the way down to the posterior tibial and had an amputation site that over 6 months they had been trying to heal with advanced wound care, and the bypass is open. So this is the lesion that this, or the wound that this lady had. And this is the angiogram of the bypass. That's a vein bypass that goes all the way down to the thigh. It's a very beautiful bypass. And if you follow it all the way down, it actually connects at the level of the posterior tibial. That's the posterior tibial where they decided to do the anastomosis. And if you follow that posterior tibial, which is the only vessel that that patient had, it seems like everything looks beautiful. But once you get to the ankle, you see that right there at the ankle, as you go by the kind of the back of the malleolus, there's certainly something that's not allowing flow to be brisk. There's a very small channel and what seems to be a subtotal occlusion. And there was no wound blush, meaning the contrast that really not goes straight into the area that we wanted to. So simple, very small wire was maneuvered through the subtotal occlusion of, obviously, the proximal lateral plantar artery. And then eventually, after we did treatment, you can see now the arch is much more robust. And more importantly, on this AP view, and this is essential for anybody trying to do this, you are really now focusing on having a wound blush positive result. We've learned this from our colleagues in Japan who do a lot of end-stage renal disease treatment, where that's what you're really trying to accomplish. This is the day after. There was a debridement, and then within this is the ulcer 2-3 weeks later, and then after a month, we got healing. So it was really, we were sitting on a regionally ischemic foot. Although the bypass was widely patent, there was really below the ankle disease. So a few concepts, I think, to understand is there is a very important collateral pathway that connects every single artery below the ankle. So the dorsalis pedis, the lateral plantar, the medial plantar. And the vessels that connect each of these vessels are called choke vessels. And these choke vessels allow the foot to be regionally perfused, usually by one vessel. So you can have really good perfusion. The problem is when these choke vessels become diseased, which happens typically in diabetes and more so in end-stage renal disease. So bear in mind that concept of collateral pathways. Concept number two is we've determined that by doing a single vessel angioplasty, we can regionally change the perfusion of the foot. And so this is a very simple study where in the box above you do SPP, so skin perfusion, before and after an intervention, and you could see how there's more perfusion into the dorsum of the foot after the anterior tibial has been treated. And the one below, it shows the same process. There's more perfusion into the plantar aspect of the foot after the posterior tibial has been treated. To set the stage that there are conditions where there are regional imbalances of foot perfusion. Not all patent bypasses will lead to a globally perfused foot. And we know that in certain cases where the arch is incomplete, it is harder for the wound care professional to be able to heal whatever ischemic wound he's dealing with. In this paper, this is a little bit more contemporary. Over 150-something bypasses were done to the distal vessels. And we examined those, they examined those that had a complete loop, an incomplete loop, or had no loop whatsoever at the foot. And you could see that the healing rates certainly are affected. So if you have a complete arch and a globally well-perfused foot, those tend to heal faster than those that have no distal flow, as is this example where you have a very, very diseased distal anatomy of the foot. Asuma does also this interesting paper where he says this whole angiosome concept, which is kind of what we're talking about, which is a three-dimensional block of tissue that's perfused by a single vessel. And so he says, it doesn't matter where you put the bypass, it doesn't affect the result. So there's a lot of debate in the vascular arena about is angiosome a thing or not. But when you dissect this particular paper, and the reason why I put the second graph on the right, so the first one just shows that direct or indirect revascularization didn't change things. But then the one on the right says, well, in end-stage renal disease patients, then there was a lot of effect. So in renal failure patients, there was a difference in this particular paper, which I think is starting to, at least in my mind, show that there may be a subset of these patients that have a specific disease of small vessels in which it becomes crucial to find a very specific perfusion to a very specific part of the foot. And so I do believe that there's an under-recognition of a subgroup of highly complex patients that have erratic flow patterns, and it is probably secondary to small vessel disease. When you do a bypass, it's like an atomic bomb on perfusion. So you do a distal bypass, you push a lot of this perfusion into that. But when you are doing endovascular therapy, it's more like being a sniper. You're increasing a very small amount of perfusion, but you could really take it to the area you want to. And so I think that there lies a difference into why bypass may be the best option for certain patients, for certain complex wounds, and why endo may be much more specific and take a more calculated approach to the wound. The performance goals we have right now are pretty crappy as vascular surgeons, and I believe that that's important because as wound care specialists, you may send the patient to the vascular surgeon, and the vascular surgeon says the patient or whoever does the intervention sends it back and says, I did a great job. Well, you guys don't really have a way to know if we did or not a great job. And we are really, and so it's hard. And it, I always bring this example that the other day I got a call from a neurologist who said, hey, I heard you're going to see one of my patients. I say, yeah, I got the consult. I'm on call. He says, well, what's your morbidity in carotids? And I don't know, specifically mine? And so what I mean with that is that in neurology and in carotid disease, we've studied it to the point that as a neurologist, you can hold us to certain specific standard. Well, in vascular surgery now, with the advent of endo, we sometimes are a little bit cavalistic. So we need to better classify things. Kawarata, again, a colleague from the Asian, from Asia, started looking at this already and classified the anatomy of the way we should see these. And so type 1 is a complete arch. Type 2A is when you have a dorsalis pedis dependent foot. 2B is when you have a posterior tibial dependent foot. And then that type 3 is where you have no outflow really into the forefoot, or you have disease in both. So these would potentially be regional ischemic areas of the foot. And if the wound is in certain particular areas and it is behaving in a way in which you may think that there's regional hypoperfusion, then that may be a way in which we can assess this. Now, we are certainly not the first group that's thinking about this, and around the world we're starting to see more papers where they're looking at outcomes in pedal arch and below the knee angioplasties in patients with end-stage renal disease. And actually, Dr. Mills, this was the paper I was telling you that it actually has Wi-Fi classification on all of these patients that they looked at, 32 of these patients. And then again from Japan, more data, where they did find that the wound healing was positively affected on the group that had a pedal loop intervention. So that's the curve on the top. And so they went on to accomplish wound healing when they did do that. Now, what's interesting about this paper is there's a paragraph of discussion that says that in general terms, blood supply through a percutaneously revascularized infrapopliteal artery is poorer and more limited than after bypass surgery. And I have to agree absolutely with that. And that is why it becomes a really thoughtful process. So either you have the ability, because you have a good conduit, and you have a complex wound, and you do a distal bypass, or you have to go sniper when you go endo, and you have to go very specifically and very distal to try to achieve the same amount of perfusion you would with a bypass when you don't have the alternative of doing a bypass. So the concept that I've been working on is, rather than stick to an angiosome that may just be the picture of an anatomy book, is looking at the wound blush and how am I able, with a catheter-directed therapy, to assure that there's going to be perfusion into that specific wound. So instead of thinking of the angiosome concept, I'm going to start talking about the woundosome concept. Because it doesn't matter how you get the blood, and it doesn't matter if you go retrograde into a plantar arch or you come from above or from below, as long as you can really get that blush working. Point in case, heel ulcer in a patient that has very typical pattern of occlusion of the posterior tibial. We've been trying to submit a paper that's just been rejected a couple of times because I don't think they like the title. It says the orphan heel syndrome. And we believe that it's this particular case is where you have heels that are ischemic. Even though you may have good forefoot perfusion, you don't have good hindfoot perfusion. But in this case, I could not get the posterior tibial open. And so, well, why don't you just go through the pedal loop and potentially treat the pedal loop and then recover the anatomy originally set in place and try to retrogradely perfuse after completing the arch anatomy and balloon angioplasty, as you can see there with really small balloons. You can perfuse the entire plantar surface from the anterior tibial going through the dorsalis pedis and then retrograde. So you really don't, because it was an endo approach, very strategically planned to take from maybe a baseline SPP to just a little bit more and maybe what you need to accomplish wound healing. Last but not least, and I'll leave you with this, another case that just shows distal bypass to the posterior tibial. Patient remained ischemic, and as you see, the posterior tibial in this case did not have a distal outflow. So the posterior tibial just had a big collateral. I'll show you here. A big collateral that would just go into the forefoot, but you had this heel necrosis and ulcer that was there still kind of stagnant. And so in this case, we did a very, very retrograde axis of the plantar artery, and we're able to slowly ascend a catheter in a retrograde fashion, crossing the occluded posterior tibial that was the only outflow vessel to the bypass that this patient had. And then once we recrossed it, we did balloon angioplasty of that, and we were very surprised and happy to find that now we had outflow. So the picture on the left is the baseline heel perfusion. The picture on the right is where you start seeing wound blush and, again, the woundosome concept. So, of course, we need validation, and I know I'm 1 minute over, so I'll wrap it up, but we need a validation to move forward. We need to understand if what we're doing makes sense, and then try to diagnose when somebody does have a very differentiated perfusion of the foot. A couple of tools out there, still in research, nothing exciting to tell you, but certainly efforts that have been put forward. One is this, it's called I'm blanking on what's
the cyan green angiography.
No, this is not that. This is a 2D perfusion software bun from Philips. And so what it does is it grabs the angiography and it changes it into colors, and then it gives you a good idea. This is the other one you were saying. This is SPI. This is another machine that we're using. You inject indocyanine green into the vein, and then the camera will light up. And so we're looking at the ingress ratio and the egress ratio and the time to peak to try to determine if there's ischemia into a certain part of the foot. And then this is the one that I was telling you at the beginning, where we injected sensors that actually give us a live feed of oxygen as we are working in the below-the-knee vessels. And you could see here, as you're doing balloon inflations in the tibials, how the oxygen content in micromoles is changing. So there is certainly some effort. So in conclusion, pedal loop angioplasties are technically feasible, but potentially disastrous, I think, if not done well or not done intelligently or nonsensically. Preliminary data suggests that this may be more important in patients with longstanding diabetes and end-stage renal disease. And finally, and very importantly, diagnostic tools of regional ischemia need to be developed, as they may also offer validation and performance goals. This is our team. Very proud. It's a growing team at Baylor. If anybody here or your trainees want to do some research with us and passionate about this, please let us know, because we're always welcoming people from around the world. And with that, I would say thank you.
Nicely done. Looks like we've got some questions from the audience. Maybe just a couple questions because we're running behind.
Miguel, as expected, super thoughtful talk. It was really great.
Thank you.
Obviously sort of leading the area. So one question is about, you know, when you see a case where you're in the OR for a lesion like you showed and you're doing the bypass, have you done this at the same time when you sort of have easy access, you know, for pushability through the graft, or, you know, given how complicated it is to come up and around and get all the way down to the foot? Have you ever done this at the same time, try to reconstruct the outflow in the foot? And if so, kind of under what circumstances, how do you make that call? It seems like it would be harder after.
So the answer is no. I honestly haven't found myself doing it in the OR. And I, to a certain extent, I believe that it's hard to know which of them are actually going to respond well. Because I really think that if you, again, the concept of when you connect that bypass, the pulsatility and the hemodynamics increase just so significantly that as long as you had thought put into where you're going to connect it by the diagnostic angiography, in general terms, I think I would wait. And then in the event that I believe that the bypass remains open, and in the event that this wound seems to still remain ischemic, then coming in antegrade and actually, the first case, I poked the bypass. It becomes very technically easy. when you work just to antegrade. That's what I would say is instead of going up and over is just poke the bypass, antegrade, and then work very comfortably in the below the ankle vessels.
Thank you for a great talk. Is non-occlusive macrovascular disease clinically significant?
In the sense,
I'm saying the functional aspect. Have you had patients where you've done bypasses and they still didn't heal? And do you, when you have those things going on, how does that come into the equation and your thought process? Because there's a functional component that I believe is clinically significant.
Right. So I'm not sure if I totally understand the question, but my answer would be, and I hope I'm answering well, is I am thirsty to have a tool that will allow me to understand if there is still ischemia in a specific part of the foot. And in the event that I do get that feedback, that I will be much more aggressive in trying to accomplish reperfusion. In the micro where I cannot affect anything, I'm sure there is some effect to that biologically. But I don't believe that there's a whole lot much we can personally do from that standpoint.
Except for exercise and dieting, don't get it.
Last question.
Yeah, great information. Thanks. I wonder if you could comment on the diameter and length of balloons you're using so far.
You know, that's a very good question. I can tell you I've progressed. I've changed in times to use bigger balloons. And right now for the usual men, I'm using a 3.5-millimeter balloon for the tibials. Going down into the ankle, I go down to a 2.0. The pedal loop, I use a 1.5. So 1.5, 2.0, 2.5, 3.5 on the top. And it's important because in the analysis that we've been doing about some of the below-the-knee drug-coated balloon studies, it appears to be that we have undersized the balloon for many years, and we are very scared of cracking open these arteries, and I think that we should push ourselves to use bigger diameters. So in general terms, really 3.5 millimeters may be the diameter that I would use in the proximal and mid-tibial, 2.5 to 2.0 into the ankle, and then from the ankle down 1.5 for the pedal loop.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.